The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
You're very welcome along to the Hard Yards Extra, or the Extra Yard, if you will. We are on our summer break at the moment, but we're very fortunate to have an opportunity to chat to former Springboks captain and Munster centre, Jan de Villiers. So we thought we had to take the call, and we thought we'd put this out as a little extra podcast special for you. During the next half an hour, we chat to Jan about his time at Munster, his toughest opponent and the toughest team that he has come across. And he just talks to us about the special memories he's had in a game that lasted for him over 15 seasons. And for him, he just kind of talks about the moments he cherishes and those kind of things that stand out in his head. Just as he says, from being so lucky to be part of 15 guys running around the field chasing a rugby ball. So I hope you enjoy.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
Hey, Jan, how are you getting on? How are things?
Yeah, it's all good, thank you. Sunshiny day, in the winter, so it's not bad.
And you're saying you're driving away in your car there. Are you heading off home, or are you heading off to see folks?
Nah, yeah, I'm on my way to a meeting. So got an office job these days, so doing a bit of TV work, but an actual office job as well. So life's very different to being a rugby player.
And what's the line of work you're in now?
Yes, so I'm actually employed by a wealth management company. It's part of a listed company in South Africa. But I've got quite a nice little gig there. So I head up the philanthropy division within the business. So working with a lot of non-profits and in the non-profit sector, and just helping in terms of the sustainability of a lot of the charities and looking at the charitable giving of our client base. So it's actually it, and quite a nice job to have, and seeing the difference that you can make in other people's lives. So I've really enjoyed that, that sort of transition into something new, being part of a corporate environment, but actually doing something that changes people's lives. So it's pretty good.
Oh, brilliant. And you were saying that you're still doing a bit of TV work. Were you working away for the South Africa versus England series recently?
Yeah, so I'm on contract with SuperSport as well. I'll broadcast in South Africa. You're doing Super Rugby, and then also the test matches that South Africa played. So I was doing all three test matches the last couple of weeks here in South Africa versus England, and quite exciting, the three test matches. I think the whole of South Africa, was a little bit tentative beforehand and not expecting a hell of a lot from South Africa, but certainly the new coach, the new players, and the new style of play surprised a lot of people. And I think we'll take the 2-1 series. And from an England point of view, I suppose for them to finish it off with a win and get back to winning ways would be a positive for them as well.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, a lot of people kind of felt, especially in those first two games with England, came out of the blocks so quickly and they were ahead. They were well ahead. I think it was 23-12 in the first test, but there was fears that maybe it was a couple of games too soon for Razi Erasmus, but they came back so well, didn't they? And the likes of Khaleesi and Faf de Klerk and a few other guys who were kind of making debuts or only a couple of tests in, like, it's in such a short space of time, things are looking a little bit brighter for South African rugby.
Yeah, look, especially that first test, with all of the emotion that went with that game and Siya Kolisi being selected as captain and sort of catching the interest of the whole of South Africa, not just the rugby supporting part of South Africa. That was quite special. And then going down 24-3 with 17 minutes into the game, and being able to take all that pressure in and turning it around and getting a win, it was a very much a roller coaster ride, that first game, and as a spectacle, I think it was brilliant. So a lot of people put their hands up and certainly showed that they belonged at at international level, and as captain, I think Sia did a fantastic job. So you mentioned the likes of Faf de Klerk, that was man of the match for that game, the influence of a Dwayne Vermeulen and a Willie LaRue, You know, and all those guys being based overseas and being brought into the Springbok fold again and playing in the series, it had a massive impact and certainly added a lot of value to a relatively young side. So all the selections that Rossier Rose was made, you know, was just spot on, and he's obviously got a long-term plan, and all the pieces of the puzzle at this stage are fitting perfectly.
And would you know, like, I know, did you cross paths when you played with Rossier at all? Like, would you have come across him much? Like, do you know him well?
Oh, yeah. So we played against each other. We never played with each other for South Africa. And then, you know, he came to Western Province and the Stormers in 2008, took over as Stormers coach, and, you know, and he made me captain then. So we worked quite closely together for a number of years. And yeah, I really enjoyed, you know, working with him and playing under him, and he had a stint with the Springboks as well in that advisory role in 2007, and then again in 2011. So I've really enjoyed that, and he really is a student of the game and has always got some nice ideas, and is showing all with the box at the moment.
Yeah, and it looks like, I think the way the World Cup works out, you know, South Africa are in a tough enough group, but it actually could work out that Ireland could face South Africa in maybe the quarter-final stage or something like that. So have you had a chance to see much of us, those games against Australia? Have you kept track of that? And you think, you know, it'd be a tough old quarter-final if those two sides came up against each other?
Yeah, well, we hope that won't happen, will we? It's an interesting series for Ireland as well, and I think you know, a lot of credit must go to their coaching side and the players for the result that they got on that tour. You know, and being able to do that while I suppose introducing a lot of call it second string players to start some of the games as well, I think is brilliant. So to develop while winning is really fantastic. And I think Ireland will be a very difficult team to beat at the World Cup next year. You know, I think New Zealand is still pretty much leading that race and a difficult team to beat. But Ireland is probably taking the biggest claim as to the next best team. And that showed again against Australia this year. It's not easy to win in Australia, and to be able to get that series win, I think, is a massive positive for them. So, look, the World Cup is still, 15, 16 months away, and a lot can change in that time. And I certainly do believe that South Africa will get better. But, yeah, if Ireland had to play South Africa tomorrow, unfortunately, I don't think it's the South African dream that we come on chance for that one.
That's good. Well, from my perspective, that's good. But kind of talking about, yeah, like the connection that maybe you and Rossier had, where you both kind of, you know, crossed paths and then played for Munster as well. And is there a couple of players, like if there's ever a South African player or coach thinking of making a switch up to, you know, maybe coming up to Ireland, to one of the provinces, would they get in touch with you? Have you convinced a few people? Have you been kind of an active agent for Munster in recent years?
I certainly have. Don't tell any of the South African rugby union people about it. But look, I absolutely loved my time at Munster, and even though it was only for one season, it really was a time that I to this day still cherish. And I love going back. I love seeing, you know, the lads that I played with again, and it really it just was a good time in my career, and not just in my career, in my life as well. With that experience, so you know, I absolutely love Munster as a club, and Ireland as a nation as well. I fully love it. So, you know, before Johan van Gaan, when he had the offer to go to Munster, he also contacted me, and I spoke to him quite a few times about the challenges, but also about the culture of the club, because I think that is what makes the club so special. The same with Jaki Tata as well. And a couple of others over the years. So, yeah, it's I will anyone that ever gets the opportunity to go there. I think from a South African point of view, I would definitely encourage them. And I have done that in the past as well. So, I should start probably charging fees for these services that I provide in South Africa. I might have to keep the Fitzgerald a call and just start negotiating on that.
Yeah. and how did it come about, like the move to Munster? How did it come about? Was you know, who reached out to you at the time and kind of said, you know, this great Irish province were on the lookout for you? And was there any other clubs that were, you know, maybe looking to get hold of you at the same time?
Yeah, look, there were a couple of clubs at that stage that were interested. You know, Sean Payne was manager at that stage at Munster, obviously playing a lot of games for them and being a South African and in a way, I wanted to challenge myself in a very different way. At that stage, I didn't have any other South African players on their books. And I wanted to take myself out of a comfort zone in South Africa and experience something different from a player and a coaching point of view. You know, experience or see the game in a different way. And also learn from that. So that's why Munster was a good fit for me then. And also I'm quite a bit of a traditionalist, and I enjoy the history of clubs, the traditions, and I think from a Munster point of view, they are big on that. And also the support that they get. It's a proper rugby club, you know, supported by the community, supported by everyone. You're not. The Blue Bulls, I suppose, in South Africa, is quite a big franchise of club in terms of rugby around the world, and people in Pretoria are quite passionate about their rugby there. But I always tell people in South Africa, take your people in Pretoria, times it by 10, and then you get the people of Limerick and how they are about Munster and Munster rugby. So it's a special place to go. Thurman Park is just, you know, it's such a great venue, and the vibe that you get there while playing or just watching the game is brilliant. So whenever anyone goes to Ireland just to visit, I tell them to, you know, have a drive through Limerick, go visit Thurman Park and experience that, the museum and all of that there. So it's pretty good.
And how did it work out for you? I know at the time the camps were split up in Cork and Limerick. You probably based yourself in Limerick, but I know when I think it was Bundy Aki and Jay Keenan came over to Galway, they were brought out for a night. They rolled into two nights out and a few drinks and stuff. Did you get a kind of similar welcome when you arrived in Limerick?
Yeah, over the years I've had a drink or two there, but yeah, it was very different then. We still had the two camps. And I quite enjoyed that, you know, the drive once a week to Cork and the banter in the car. And I thought that was special as well. And for a team like that, a professional team, to be able to function with basically two camps and still be as successful as what they were back then, I think it's fantastic. You know, it takes a special team and special individuals to be able to achieve that. And I think we saw that with that grouping of O'Connell, Agara, Harlett, Hayes, Flannery, Marcus Horan, David Wallace, you know, the list goes on and on. You know, it was remarkable what they did. But I actually went back to the facility, to Limerick, on last in November and saw the new facility that they had there. And it's world class, you know. So it's a facility that certainly is conducive to success and one that they can be very proud of. And I'm sure that will create a lot of success going forward as well. So it's great what they achieved there. But like I said, the drive to Cork once a week was pretty special as well. And I suppose you lose a bit by not having that anymore.
Yeah, and would you? Yeah, because I remember speaking to Anthony Foley before, and he spoke about that, and because he came into, you know, Munster in the mix of amateur and professional days, and he was saying that those are the type of drives that you would miss a bit, and you know you'd be sharing cars with people, and you know, would you be doing that? Would you drive on your own, or would you and a couple of lads all hop in a car together and take goes driving?
Yeah, no, we used to hop in a car together, you know, and take on the drive to Cork. So, you know, and that's also a way to get to know the teammates a little bit better. And obviously for me as an outsider coming in and a foreigner coming in, You know, it helps in terms of getting, like I said, getting to know your teammates and creating special bonds off the field as well, because it is quite important in a team environment. Like, you need to get to know, you know, your teammates off the field as well. And when you get closer off the field, that transfers onto the field as well, and usually helps in the performances on the field. Or that's certainly, you know, what I felt over the or experienced over the year. So, like I said, it is something that'll probably be missed now with only having one venue. But then again, you gain a lot of extra time where you can probably have some other social gatherings as a squad in one venue.
And is there anybody who stood out? I was kind of just thinking, like, you know, maybe you haven't played inside centre a few times. You're kind of, you know, second receiver, or you're kind of so close to O'Gara. Was he somebody that kind of stood out as, you know, did he help you settle in? I'm sure he wouldn't give you too many games to get your feet under the table before he's barking at you already.
Yeah, no, look, it's having played international rugby for 7 years prior to joining Munster. You know, I had the opportunity to get to know some of the guys, and while we were still busy with the Lions series in South Africa earlier that year, I think it was after the second or third test, and at that stage, I've not announced it that I'd be joining Munster, and Paul O'Connell came into our change room and we had a chat, and he was like, "Oh yeah, you're joining us." And I was like, Not yet. No, they don't know yet. So, but yeah, I've got some good stories about a lot of the lads, and I suppose those international guys that I got to know prior to going there certainly helped with the transition. And I was based in Limerick, so having a guy like Paul O'Connell helping, having a guy like Sean Payne, even though he wasn't a manager, but he certainly helped in terms of our settling in. And then the core guys, A. O'Gara, A. Howlett, Keith Altback, in Limerick as well, Ian Downing, who was playing at that stage, Dave Murphy, in Limerick, you know, so guys that certainly helped with the transition, and guys that I'm still in touch with to this day. Barry Murphy came over for his honeymoon to South Africa earlier this year, and came over for a nice barbecue at my house, and sort of reminiscent about what happened in Limerick back then. So yeah, it's good, and I suppose that's the beauty about that, that you get to make new friends, and you get to know people that you usually would never have met, and to keep those bonds strong, and to actually make an effort to keep it strong, I think is what makes rugby so special.
And when Barry was over, did he bring his guitar with him? Was he playing any music when he was over there?
Unfortunately, he didn't. You know, so he's done fantastically well since retiring from rugby. So hopefully that can still last for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. So just going back then, maybe before even this, you know, your breakthrough and the trip over to Europe and the Lions, and you know, all the kind of great achievements you had in your career. Just kind of maybe your early days in South Africa, where you grew up. You know, what type of a neighbourhood was it you grew up in, and were you from like a rugby mad family, or did you have any other kind of sporting interests?
Yeah, look, I was very fortunate to grow up in a in a rugby family. My father played for Western Province as well, and if I'm honest, I can't remember and life without rugby. Every memory that I have, rugby was always relevant and always there and thereabouts. And I was fortunate to have rugby people and legends of South African rugby in our house growing up, you know, on a weekly basis almost. At that stage, obviously, I had no clue who some of them were. But later on, I realised, and I'm very fortunate that a lot of them stayed in my life and influenced my career for a very long time, and until I eventually retired from rugby. So I had a very privileged upbringing, and rugby was always part of that. So went to a good rugby school, got good coaching, and even though I played most sports and loved cricket and swam, you know, provincially at age group level, and did athletics, and like I said, captain my first in cricket team. yeah, rugby was always a sport that I wanted to do and wanted to excel at. So I was fortunate to get a contract straight out of school, and sort of the rest is history, you know. So it was always my dream, even before rugby turned professional. I was just lucky to be able to live that dream and have a career, and a really long career, as a professional player. It's an opportunity that not a lot of people get, and I'm very fortunate to have had that.
And yeah, you mentioned your dad playing for Western Province as well then. So is that kind of something that stands out to you, if you kind of those early games, you know, standing out there and you know, your family getting along to watch games? Just kind of must have been kind of proud moments for you when you were making those initial breakthroughs.
Yeah, and look, firstly, rugby's pretty big in South Africa. And I never saw my dad play, but he was very much involved with rugby for a long time, post his playing days. And I still remember, you know, us going to rugby games, club games, and it was very much, you know, community-driven. The wives and kids and everything would go with. So my dad and my mom and my brother and I would go, and my brother and I would be ball boys next to the field for the teams playing. And and it really just made me fall in love with the game. So it's special those days. And hopefully at some stage I can experience the same with my son.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it. Like, because you kind of lucky enough, I suppose, some guys don't maybe get a chance to do it as much in their children. They start families after they retire. But, you know, your children are old enough maybe in those last couple of years of your career to kind of go into dressing rooms with you, maybe bring you out onto the pitch as well. Are those kind of things you look back on and kind of fondly remember too?
Yeah, that's probably one of my proudest, if not my proudest moment of my career, was when I played in the Highland the first game. And look, and the girls can't remember that, but I had my two daughters at that stage, age 3 and 1.
Mm.
You know, they went out to the field with me, and I remember them running around post game and sort of just having a good time. And my son at that stage, or my wife pregnant at that stage with my son, so he never experienced that. They'll never remember that, but it was actually this last weekend they showed that, and because the Beast played his 100th test match, and they sort of showed the images of my 100th or 101st game as well. And then I showed them on TV, and I couldn't believe that they were on TV, you know. So those are special memories, and like I said, all due to a silly game of sitting and chasing the ball and trying to hit each other, you know. So I was fortunate enough to be relatively good at it and have a fantastic life as a professional player.
I was looking back, I think this is maybe the last time I spoke to you. I was looking at your, you know, career record and in terms of tests you played against, and like, for a guy, like, I think you must, like, so many games against the All Blacks as well, like, one of the toughest sides to ever kind of play in the world, but you actually had a decent enough record. You took a few scalps from them over the years. Were they, when you look back on, I know you played the Lions as well, but, you know, and you played in a couple of World Cups, but was that the biggest challenge you ever had, like the All Blacks, and was there a certain side that stood out to you as the, you know, the toughest or of guys of a certain generation?
Yeah, look, growing up as a South African as well, the challenge between South Africa and Springboks and the All Blacks, has always been quite big, and we really do respect them for that. So, yes, it was. I think I played the All Blacks 23 or 24 times, which is quite a lot, and I think I had my number 10 wins in that time. So, not the kind of success rate you want, but I suppose not bad in terms of the way that they've dominated, certainly in the last couple of years. So, there's always a big challenge. The Lions series is always so special because, you know, from a South African point of view, you only get that opportunity once every 12 years. So having played in the series in 2009 was pretty special, and playing the first few tests and winning both, you know, so 100% record against them, that's something that I'm really proud of. And then obviously World Cups as well, being involved there, even though I was quite unlucky having been selected for 4 World Cups and basically getting injured in all 4 of them.
So, Jeepers, yeah.
I had a lot of highlights, had a lot of upset that you ruled, but then again, that's life, and you learn from it.
Yeah, considering that you had all those, you know, a couple of bad knee injuries, like you still had 109 caps for South Africa as well. And I think the one that stands out to most people, did you get injured before the 2011 World Cup? You maybe missed the whole tournament?
No, 2011 I did play. I played in the first game, broke a couple of ribs, and then played again in the quarterfinal, which we lost. So, the biggest blow was probably the 07 one, where I got injured in the very first game, my bicep against Samoa, and then, you know, we went on to win the World Cup, so I've got the medal, but didn't really think that I deserved it.
Yeah, like that's it. Roy Keane missed the Champions Cup final or Champions League final for Manchester United, and they gave him the medal, and I don't know. I can't imagine he has it on display, but I know you like, considering you helped, you know, you got them there to where they were, and you're part of that squad. Like, but the one, yeah, that a lot of people kind of remember, maybe because it's recent in their memory, was the horrible knee injury you had in 2015, and you know that was pretty awful, wasn't it? Just how long were you out for after that?
Yeah, look, I was quite a bad one and a big setback, but again, you know, like I said, I like to be quite philosophical about these things and realize that it happens, you know, and life happens, and that adversity is something that will happen at some stage, and you just need to take it on with a positive attitude. So I was out for just over 6 months with that knee injury, back playing again, but it was always tough to come back, and you're never back to the same sort of standard. But again, learned a lot for myself in fighting all the demons throughout that 6 month period of rehab, and just showing that it's possible if you really work hard. So, you know, happy with the end result in that I could play a game. It certainly wasn't easy.
And how is the body now? Like, you're only 37 years old, still a young man in relative terms, and you know, you've been out of rugby now a couple of years. Like, so has the body healed up? Like, do you still do stuff to? I know from just chatting to so many rugby players that they keep a very good general level of fitness. They'd probably argue otherwise. But do you still kind of, you know, are you still active in any sports or vain about the body?
Yeah, not really. I'm trying to juggle the sort of new career and family life and all of that. So what's frustrating is not getting time to actually train. So my knee is giving me a fair bit of issues every now and then, and not really able to run. So the body takes strain, but I suppose as regular players, you sort of get used to living with the pain, and it is what it is, and I just need to make it work.
Yeah, and we kind of talked about the toughest team, or, you know, facing those All Blacks and the Lions and stuff. In terms of players, is there anybody, you know, a couple of players that stood out as the toughest guys you ever came across?
Yeah, very much so. Look, having played for quite a long time on the international scene, I played against some brilliant centres. You know, Brian O'Driscoll, you know, one of the best I ever played against. Sterling Mortlock, Tana Umaga, Yannick Jozian from France, Sunnyboy Williams, Matt Kittau, and Ma Nonu would probably be the one that sits right at the top. So played against some brilliant players and always enjoyed the challenge. And I also believe that it's a lot of the time it's about the partnerships that you play against in the midfield, and Darcy and O'Driscoll certainly they were a great partnership, and probably right up there with Nonu and Conrad Smith, Manny Tulagi that I played with and against as well. So some brilliant players, and a lot of them I got to know over the years as well, and can now call my friends.
And yeah, I remember we spoke for the Hard Yards earlier on this season with Conor Murray, and he was saying that the two jerseys he, you know, if you swap jerseys at the end of the game, he'd cherish most would be Mike Phillips and Aaron Smith, you know, maybe guys that he kind of associated himself with and had battles against with. Is there any kind of jerseys that you swapped that have pride of place in your house?
Look, I don't have any rugby memorabilia up in my house. But yeah, you know, the jersey that I have of my Nonu that he, you know, actually for my 100th test match, he gave me his jersey and really appreciated that. And then I swapped jerseys with Rog, with Paulie O'Connell as well. Mm. And so those I really do change, where you didn't only play against them, but they're actually your friends. And so I haven't thought about it like that. But I would say those are pretty special. Jamie Roberts' jersey that I also have of the Lions series. Quite a few. I should go through the selection again and see what I actually have.
Go in and search the wardrobe and see what's kind of there. One of the things I kind of like best about the Springboks, they often did, and it was, I don't know, even Razzie kind of brought it back in a little bit when he was at Munster, was just the idea of popping over to the opposition dressing room at the end of the game and having a few beers. You know, you don't even have to have a few beers, just have a chat, and, you know, at the end of the 80 minutes, you're all still, as you said, 15 guys just playing against each other. Is that, when you look back on the game, is that one of the things that stands out most? It's not even the time out on the pitch, it's those kind of few minutes or that half an hour in the dressing room at the end of games. Is that something to you that you'd kind of cherish a lot?
Yeah, I think that's something that's been lost in the professional era, where you don't get time to socialise with the opposition that much. And certainly in the amateur era, you still hear the stories about opposing players still being in contact and being friends and building on those relationships post playing days. So I enjoyed that and just getting to know the other guys. And I suppose through doing that, you build up a bit of respect as well. So it is something that I will always encourage, and hopefully they can do more of that.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jan, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and thanks for taking some time out of your day to chat with us here at the Hard Yards. And hopefully maybe in the next year or so, when as the World Cup ramps up, we might be lucky enough to chat with you again.
Fantastic. Thanks, Pat, and all the best there.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi Rob, Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ringrose comes through. Oh, that is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score!